believe that he won't change. Say it. Never.
Never ending, the same God.
He's the same God today, yesterday, and forevermore. And that's why we call you Jesus.
You are Jesus, the same God.
Yes, you are. You are holy, the same God.
You are holy, the same God.
Yeah. You are my redeemer.
My redeemer, the same God.
Yes, you are. And you're my provider.
My provider, the same God.
And if you believe, he's still healing, he's still saving. Come on, say it.
Cause you're doing it all again.
Yes, you are, God, and we love you for doing it.
Cause you're doing it all again.
You're the same God that gives us faith right now.
Cause you're doing it all again.
That's why we can declare that we're coming out.
Cause you're doing it all again.
We can have faith in the midst of fire. Cause you're doing it all again.
Cause you're doing it all again.
Cause you're doing it all again. You never change.
Cause you're doing it all again.
That's why we trust you with our life.
Cause you're doing it all again.
We declare you're coming out. We declare that you healed. We declare that you set free. Cause you're doing it all again.
Cause you're doing it all again.
Though you walk through the valley, you should have no fear.
Cause he's doing it all again.
Somebody screaming loud.
Cause you're doing it all again.
We pray you have a great day and a great week in Jesus' name. And you can have faith in the midst of your fire.
We pray that our broadcast was a blessing to you. If you would like to have a copy of today's message on CD, please contact us at www.joydara.org or at our postal service at P.O. Box 6006, Alexandria, Louisiana, 71307. Or you can call us at 1-888-JOY-DARA. That's 1-888-563-3232. Again, that's 1-888-563-3232. Thank you for listening to today's broadcast. May God bless you and yours.
This is KAYT, Gina, Alexandria. This is Gospel Radio at its very best. 88.1. KAYT, praising the Lord.
Grab your word and stand with me. I promise I won't be before you long. See, I've been practicing. Ruth 2 and 5 says, "Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, Whose damsel is this?" Please be seated. Oh, I didn't see if y'all knew where the word was. I was supposed to wait and see if you found it. Oh, gosh. Please be seated. Y'all don't tell Bishop, though, okay? I'm really excited to be speaking here for the very first time. It's also my children's very first time speaking, so I'm glad that they're going to act right all through service and that I won't have to give them the eye or anything. They've been going through boot camp, my children have, because sometimes when they spend a lot of time with their grandparents or aunts and they come home, they forget that they don't have any, you know, that they have home training. So I put them through boot camp where I just get on to them for doing small things that I would usually let slide, and you know, they've been grounded, but we're working through it, right, guys? Right, guys? The thing is that they both act just like me. So Malachi, who is my son, he's 11. When he's grounded, he starts being really helpful around the house. Like, I didn't know he could fold clothes, but evidently he can. He can, like, move the refrigerator and start sweeping. It's really incredible. Mackenzie, on the other hand, she acts just like me too, and that's why I have a book called Lost and Found, because when she gets in a little bit of trouble, she decides, hey, I'm already grounded, let's see how much fun we can have with this. So I put her in timeout, and she starts praying out loud. Like, how do you correct that, you know? Or I tell her, you know, Kenzie, go up to your room, and she starts swinging off of the doors, which is certainly something that she got from me. But I can tell that both of them are my children. Whenever they're in trouble, they're just different sides of me. And so it's been an incredible journey seeing yourself in your children as you raise them, because you're not as hard on them. You kind of become a little bit more compassionate because you understand, you know, exactly where they got it from. And then it really does strengthen your prayer life as well. It's interesting because somewhere between the age of 4 and 11, you start to learn that you can't keep doing the same thing that got you in trouble. You know, you start to learn that maybe when I'm in timeout, I need to work a little harder, go the extra mile to get out of this situation. And so the funny thing, though, is that my son, who we're waiting for his report card before we can break some chains in his life. But he's like, Mom, I aced my test. Can I not be grounded anymore? Mom, I folded my clothes. Can I not be grounded anymore? What do you do when you're doing all of the right things, but you still feel like you're grounded? You're passing the test. I'm doing everything you told me to do in your word, but I still feel like I'm being isolated for no reason. What do you do when you start to believe that your isolation is punishment and no longer protection? So that is the stage in which we find Ruth gleaning in the fields. She kept her commitment to her husband. He passed away. She kept her commitment to Naomi. She's bitter. She made it all the way to Bethlehem. Now she's an outcast in the fields, wondering, I assume, when is this going to pay off? I see everyone else around me. I took my faith, and I'm holding on to it, and I'm trying to be strong, and I'm trying to hold it all together. But for some reason, you keep trusting me with struggle. You keep trusting me with the weight of the world on my shoulders. And I'm trying to be strong, and I'm trying to keep the faith, because that's what they tell me to do. But for some reason, I just wish you would take it a little easy on me, because I'm passing all the tests, and I'm doing all the homework, and I'm folding all the clothes, but I'm still breaking on the inside. So we find Ruth in the field wondering, what do I have to do to become better? Doing all the right things, not getting any results. Can you trust God when you feel like he's not there, or do you take matters into your own hands? I grew up in this church, and I felt like an outcast. I cannot sing, which, you know, as soon as you hear that you're a preacher's art, everybody wants you to sing, right? I tried. It's not for me. And when I say I tried, I mean I know all the hand movements, all of them. I got moves that you can't even imagine. But the voice just isn't there. And so I can't really preach like Bishop Jakes preached, but who can, you know? So who wants to do that? So I left that part alone, and, you know, I had my son when I was 14, and I felt like, well, I was already an outcast. Now I'm even more of an outcast. So now I feel isolated in my own home, in my own field, and I'm trying to keep the faith. You know, it's so funny that Ruth found herself in the field and feeling like an outcast, because did you know that the other people in the fields were outcasts too? Deuteronomy 24:19 tells us that Mosaic law required that the fields not be harvested wholly so that the portions could be left for the strangers, the fatherless, and for the widow. So how can you be an outcast amongst your own people? In the church, where it's supposed to be okay to be broken, and I can't show you that I'm hurting. Worshiping, praying, lifting my hands, but I can't exactly show you where I'm bleeding because I'm afraid that you'll see that I'm an outcast too. When do we start covering up the fact that we're all outcasts? I wonder why the other gleaners in the field didn't say, hey, you over there by yourself, come with us. We're bleeding too. Because I remember sitting in this very church searching the crowd for someone who could understand the pain that was on my face. Oh, not my face, I meant behind the mask. Behind the mask, like the face that I have when I lay my head down at night and I wonder if anyone else is broken too. And so I wonder, how do you become an outcast in the fields? And so I'm not fitting in the church world, and I started to view my isolation as punishment. My mom always talks about how I wanted to live in the hood. Because I was like, listen, this church thing is not for me. Like, I don't really fit. The Bible's not really that interesting to me. Like, I'm going to be honest because that's what I'm known for. Like, when I was reading the Bible at 13, it doesn't really jump at you. I mean, when Bishop preaches it, it's one thing. But how do you build a relationship with God when you don't really know where to start? And so I decided that it would be easier to build a relationship with the world because there's always a place for the hurting in the world. Always. Always a place for the hurting in the world. Always. Always. Now, it might not be the healthiest place. It might not be the safest place. And you might end up more broken than when you went into the world. But there's always a place for you. And sometimes misery loves company because there's nowhere else to go. So I wonder, when I was reading the text and preparing for the night, that Ruth asked them, could she glean behind the reapers? Not could she glean with them. Could she glean behind them? Isn't it funny how sometimes we don't even feel worthy of being with other people? Because had she known that they were outcasts too, maybe she would have asked, but you don't really know what's going on behind someone else's mask, or if it's a mask, or if it's true. And so you start sticking to yourself. Because if you risk telling your truth and there's no echo on the other side of the room, then you've just exposed your wound to what? I think it's so easy for us, it would be so much easier if we bonded over our condition and our suffering and started comforting the fact that we don't have it all together, but we're trying, instead of isolating someone who sinned differently than we sinned. So now you an outcast for what you did, and I'm an outcast over there for what I did. But couldn't we all just be outcasts searching for grace together? Isn't that what Christianity is supposed to be? We're not supposed to fit in. We're supposed to be outcasts. So when did we start being outcast in church? Like, we're already outcast in the world, but now we have to be an outcast in the church too? I can't speak because I had my baby at 14. I have to pay for that forever. There's no recovery. There's no redemption. So what are we preaching? What are we preaching? And how do we save the people in the world if we aren't willing to admit that we understand what it's like to be lost? That we understand what it's like to not have it all together? And that we're all just wearing masks, dressing up, clapping our hands and going home and crying at night. I got tired of it. Because there's something about coming together that helps us when we come together for the right reasons. When two or three are gathered in his name, there I will be in the midst. I was preparing and I was looking at what happens when you get two babies, twins, and they're co-bedding because one of them was born prematurely, and then the other one starts suffering. And so they initially start off in separate incubators, but when they notice that one of them is suffering, they put them together because there's something about having that touch that makes the other one realize they're not alone. And I can borrow some of your strength, and I can borrow some of your hope, and I can borrow some of your faith. But you have to be willing to admit that you're suffering first. It's not enough to say, I'm going to stay right here in my little incubator because I think I'm going to be okay. And I could probably help you if I open my mouth, but then I would have to tell everyone that I don't have it together. So how many people are we losing because we aren't willing to co-bed in our suffering? To admit that we're all in intensive care and that we're all still trying. Instead, we see our isolation as punishment. But what about those moments when God calls you to be alone? Because even the twins have to be separated when they reach a certain point. There is a point in your life when you continue to develop in Christ where he might call you to be alone. And if you aren't careful, you'll see your isolation as punishment, and you'll never fully understand the lessons that he's trying to teach you. I thought that because I didn't fit into what I thought church was supposed to be, that I should take matters into my own hands and try to fit somewhere else. And I ended up hurting myself over and over again because I wouldn't accept that I had been isolated on purpose. On purpose. It wasn't punishment. God wasn't just being mean to me. He saw all of these wonderful things that were happening here at the Potter's house, and I didn't feel like I was a part of it, but that wasn't intentional. He had set me apart. But we resent the fact that we've been set apart because we don't get to look like the other gleaners in the field. And we just want to fit in. And we just want to feel okay about what we've been through. Can we tell whose you are when you're isolated? When my kids are grounded, those are my kids. Ken still being bad, that's me. Kai going the extra mile, that's me. Isn't it funny, when your children are grounded, you can still tell that they're yours? But when God isolates us, we don't feel like he knows who we are anymore. Could it be that he still knows us even when we're isolated? Could it be that he is trusting us to see that, can I still recognize you when I'm not doing everything you want me to do? Can you keep the faith then? When you're doing all the right things and things aren't going your way, can you trust that the isolation may have a purpose? See, because on the other side of Ruth being isolated, Boaz was looking at her, but Ruth didn't know that. Who's looking at you in your isolation? And how you handle this test, and how you handle this trial, and how you handle this storm. Can I still tell that God's got his hand on you? Or are you trying to move the hand so much that you out there struggling on your own for no reason? Because it didn't go the way you wanted it to. And I'm not talking just about you, I'm talking about me, because I tried to create my fairy tale. I said, you know what, I messed up. I'm an outcast. I'll accept that. I'll fix it myself. I don't have to play by the church rules. I'll just go out in the world, and I'll be an outcast, and I'll roam all through these fields and world, and I'll do what I want to, because I'm going to try and create my fairy tale, because I don't really feel like I fit anywhere. And when you start to view the isolation as punishment, it starts to be solitary confinement in your own mind. And do you know what happens when you start to confine yourself? I was studying and they said that solitary confinement, that the fastest thing they see is that the prisoners no longer mind soiling themselves. Because no one can see it. How many times do we start soiling ourselves? Because no one can see that we've been confined in our mind, the things you tell yourself. His grace doesn't apply to you because you went too far. You're no longer able to access mercy because something happened to you when you were a child. You brought that rape on yourself. You're damaged goods because you were molested. How do we soil ourselves over and over again because we're isolating our pain? Infecting ourselves with our pain over and over again. So it should come as no surprise that we end up in solitary confinement in our own minds, projecting what we think others think about us. I imagine if I was Ruth in the field, I would be like, they don't want to talk to me no way. Everything I touch is bitter, dead, gone. I'll be by myself anyway. Because they don't know, and I don't want to tell them that I'm soiling myself. I'd rather be in this field a little bit behind, trying to do the best I can, trying to tell myself that maybe, just maybe, if I do things this way, I'll be okay. I don't think we should despise the moments when we don't fit in. Because had Ruth fit in the way she wanted to, would she have stood out to Boaz? Would she have even said, if you were exactly where you wanted to be in life, could God still use you? I mean, you would be where you wanted to be. But does that serve a purpose for God? So how can we use our isolation as preparation? They say that solitary confinement in prison is used as the method to control the prisoners. They want to break them. You playing by my rules now. So when I tell you to go to bed, if you don't go to bed, I'm going to lock you up and I'm going to break you over and over again until you give up your control. Don't you know that God will break you over and over again until you give up your control? That you'll be in solitary confinement in your own world, trying to make things right, trying to bring things together for your own. And God will say, until you give up your control, until you give up your control, until you realize that you started this mess and I'm going to clean it up. I'm going to clean it up. Not you, because you're in over your head. But we don't want to admit that we're in over our head. We want to fight back. We want to hold on to that little bit of control that makes us think that we are still capable of cleaning it up. But we created the mess. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I don't. I want to do right. I want to find my way. I want to honor you with my life, but I really just don't know how anymore. What is going to be your breaking point? Because when he finally gets the lesson through and the prisoners finally give up control, then they can be released back into general population. Because now I can trust you again. I can trust you to be out there in your own, in the world, but not of the world. See, we want everything so fast. Had I moved into the hood like I told my mother I wanted to at 14, no telling what type of drug I would have ended up on. If he would have really let you have your way. If he would have really gave you the man you wanted and really gave you the life you wanted and the finances you wanted, you don't even know. Maybe you needed to be broke so you can learn how to budget. No, let's keep it real. Maybe you needed to be hurt over and over so that you could appreciate a good man. Maybe. We don't know why your pain has isolated you, but until you stop seeing it as punishment, you'll never get the lesson from it. You'll never be able to give up control and let God have his way as long as you're still holding on to what you want, how you want it, when you want it. Gotta have it. I learned that when I was studying the solitary confinement, Martha McClintock, who is a professor at the University of Chicago, said that the isolation may actually serve a really good purpose, because once a mouse had been isolated, they realized that once they set them free, that they kind of stayed on the edge and they didn't venture into the middle of the cage anymore because they had learned boundaries. Is your isolation teaching you boundaries? You won't go too far, so I'm going to have to isolate you. If I give you everything that you want right now, you're going to lose it. So you got to let me mold you. And that might mean that I have to break you a little bit, but I won't break you without purpose. But you'll break yourself over and over again. So when do we learn to finally let go and really let God? I started to feel like I was just like, you know, this black sheep of the family. And so I finally decided, you know what, I'm going to accept the isolation and realize that maybe, just maybe, God has something better for me. So I started to do the right thing even when I was isolated. And for me, isolation was living in Virginia. I was away from home, away from church. It was about 3 years that I was gone. And I was like, I'm going to do all the right things, though. I got my little fairy tale. I got everything I wanted. And I was like, now I'm going to do the right thing, sow the right seeds, and then maybe God will bless my life, right? And I kept losing over and over again. And I was cooking dinner, and things wasn't going right. And I was folding the clothes, and I was like, being this Proverbs 31 wife, you know, like I'm doing all of the right things, but I still felt like I was losing. And I was wondering if maybe because I didn't give up control before, and now I wanted God to take over. Like, I wanted to get it together my way. And then I gave it to him. This is what I want you to work on. Nothing else. Work on this. See, it's pretty now. See, I went out and got what everybody told me to do, and I went and recovered from the pregnancy, and I went out and did everything they told me to do in church, and now here you go, God, bless me. And he said, that's not it yet. I don't want your perfect little picture and your perfect idea of what you think you need. I want to give you what I have for you. I want to give you the hopes that I have for you. See, because you're thinking too small. You think I called you to be somebody's wife. You thought that that was the only way to recover? What about the thousands of women who need to know that they weren't alone? Who's going to help them if you settle here for what you think is enough? Your isolation in Virginia, for me, my isolation, I had to come home back to where it started, because I realized at some point that maybe I'd missed the mark. And maybe I was trying to comfort my misery, and God was trying to confront it. So I came back to the place where I felt like an outcast first. Sitting over there in that little section, waving my hands, crying my tears. I mean, the ugly cry. The real good ugly one. Because I was hurting, and I felt like I passed the test, I was doing the homework, and I was still failing my courses. And I wanted to know if God would consider helping me find my way back. And the thing about that is that you have to be humble enough to admit that you got it wrong in the first place. You have to be willing to admit that you tried it your way and that it didn't work. And do you know how much pride it takes to make an announcement after a big old wedding? All on Essex.